coming out of turn four, we're back with the Three Wide Podcast with EG3.
And thanks for tuning in.
Buckle up. The Three Wide Podcast is on the air. In-depth analysis between the three biggest divisions in NASCAR. The Gander Outdoor Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and the NASCAR Cup Series. And now, the green flag flies from the Little Apple in Manhattan, Kansas. Podcasting to the world. It's the Three Wide Podcast with EG3. Here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Y'all know what time it is. It is the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3. That is me, Eddie Greer III, here once again, coming to you from the MHK, Manhattan, Kansas, once again for the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, King World Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the NASCAR Cup Series, the three biggest divisions in all of motorsports. And this is going to be another special guest episode edition of the podcast. Before we get into our guest here, who's going to call in very shortly, the 3Wide Podcast, find me at Eddie_EG3 on Twitter. Again, at Eddie_EG3 on Twitter. And the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, find it wherever you find your podcast or listen to your podcast, whether it's from Apple Podcasts. If you're listening from there, leave us a rating, 5-star rating, and review if you want to. That will continue to get the word of the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast. We're on Spotify, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. A 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, folks, is off and running here as the heat has been turned up here in Manhattan, Kansas in the summertime, and action has been turned up on the racetrack as well. Obviously, Harvick will talk about it with our special guest. Harvick, once again, a winner in the Cup Series and a third time in his career at Indy. Meanwhile, in the Xfinity Series, a inaugural road course race, Chase Briscoe with a daring 3-wide, no pun intended, move on Austin Cindric and AJ Allmendinger. Briscoe has been super hot in the Xfinity Series, now having 5 wins now. He wanted 8. Well, he's getting even closer already. And we're in July, folks. So, action heating up. And we have all three divisions in play coming up in Kentucky this weekend. Actually, starting tomorrow night, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday, July 8th. And I was not honestly aware that the Xfinity Series is going to be doing double dip in Kentucky beginning tomorrow night, getting that set up. And then Friday night is the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. And then, of course, the Cup Series, the big show on Sunday afternoon. So Kentucky was once, obviously, was a day race, turned into a night race. Well, actually, that was actually one time because when it rained out. But Kentucky was formerly a night race, and now with the whole scheduling thing with the COVID-19 and everything else moved to the daytime, that's going to be really interesting with the current settings in the Cup Series. And we have seen for the last really three races the bout between, not physically but on the racetrack, getting heated up with Harvick for Stuart Haas and Denny Hamlin. Oh man, Denny Hamlin, you gotta feel bad for him. Obviously, we saw plenty of dangerous hard hits once again at IMS there. And Denny Hamlin, it's a perfect reminder there that nothing's guaranteed there. We're all sitting back like, damn, Denny Hamlin's going to win again. But and all of a sudden, the tide turns. He hits the wall with the right front, hard impact there. Harvick's right there. Kenseth gets by. Matt Kenseth had a great run there, finishing in the second spot. So, obviously, and actually, we have our guest right now calling in. So, we're going to step aside for a quick moment. And we'll be back on the other side. We're going to play our closing music right here. We'll be back in just a few moments, folks. Thank you. 3 Wide NASCAR Podcast is back on the airwaves. That fast, folks. Eddie Greer, the third here in Manhattan, Kansas for the 3 Wide NASCAR Podcast. As usual, the three biggest divisions in all of motorsports. And folks, already we have our special guest on the line joining us via from my phone anyways, Hamptonville, North Carolina. You can correct me, Rick, if I'm wrong on that, but the host of the Scene Vault Podcast, none other than Rick Houston. Rick, what is going on?
Man, I am excited to talk to you. Anytime I get a chance to talk racing with a fellow race fan, I am all about it. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for quite a while, so I'm very excited to have you on the podcast. It's an absolute honor to have you on the podcast. So,
all right, man. Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. We'll talk Seabolt here momentarily, but obviously, before we dive into what happened at Indianapolis last weekend, give us some of the new listeners on the podcast. Give us a little brief bio about yourself and how did you get started in NASCAR.
Oh gosh, how much time do you have? a quick bio. I became a race fan, and I was going to races, and I was in the pits, and I was getting autographs just like everybody else. I've always been a writer. I've always been interested in journalism, and after I got into college, after I got out of college, that's kind of the course that I set for myself. And because I love journalism and because I love NASCAR, I decided that I really, really wanted to pursue motorsports journalism. And over and above everything, I wanted to one day work for Winston Cup Scene. That was the premier publication back in the day, and it was the best. And because it was the best, I wanted to one day write for them. And after a 4-year odyssey, that at one point I was all but homeless and going to the races and stinking food out of the press box and sleeping in my car, and one thing led to another, and I got a job at a small weekly newspaper here in North Carolina. And after 2 years there, I actually got a job with Winston Cup Scene as a staff writer. So that's a very short version, and it's a roller coaster journey. But I did eventually land my dream job there at Winston Cup Scene.
Yeah, you go into it much more deeper on your own podcast. I have listened to those. Listen to those stories. So.
Well, I don't want to bore anybody, so I can bore somebody on my podcast.
Oh man, oh man. But yeah, Rick, last week I'm gonna be bouncing around quite a bit, but last week before the IMS weekend, Indianapolis, obviously, NASCAR has been back for quite a while now after the whole shutdown with the whole COVID-19, and NASCAR has done a pretty good job with dealing with all this and getting these races in, and definitely Mother Nature's had a lot to say about these races, but NASCAR has done a great job. But Jimmy Johnson, and as of this morning, he was cleared by NASCAR to get back into 48 for this upcoming race in Kentucky after being tested positive for COVID-19. And from what I've read and what he said, obviously he has a wife and two kids, but man, there was an individual that was tested for COVID-19 early on, but now you have an actual driver, a marquee name, a 7-time champion, who got tested positive. A very scary situation there.
Yeah, it's definitely very scary, and I think it's proof that we all need to be very careful, because as soon as you think that it can't happen to you, it's going to happen to you. So yeah, if you think you don't need to wear a mask out in public, think again. And you know, if you don't care about your own health, that's one thing. But care about somebody else's.
Yeah,
care about somebody else and wear the mask. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, we all got to do this together if we want to have some type of quote unquote normalcy moving forward. But yeah, it's affecting Major League Baseball. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see what the NFL does. NBA still trying to sort things out. So yeah, so Jimmy, we back in the 48 this weekend at Kentucky. But man, Roger Penske for IMS taking over the ownership of the famous historic racetrack at IMS, changing things up, and the road course race on Saturday was something else. It was very exciting, especially with the last few laps there with Chase Briscoe going three wide on Austin Cindric and AJ Allmendinger there. And then there were a lot of fans and friends of mine that talked to me about should Cup move over to switch over to the road course. There's been a lot of talk going about that now, but reading Jeff Gluck's article during lunchtime, and he said, let's just stick with the traditional oval. So how big is that? That obviously Indianapolis has had a storied share of big name drivers winning the race. Obviously Jeff Gordon, Dale Sr., Kevin Harvick winning his third there. What's so amazing about IMS?
Well, you just think about the history of the place. They started racing there, I believe, in 1912, and it is the most historic venue in all of motorsports. And I can't even tell you or begin to describe how big a deal it was for NASCAR to go to Indy in 1990 for the first time for a test. I mean, there were a lot of people there for even a test back in 1992, and then certainly when we raced there for the first time in 1994, that was a huge, huge step for NASCAR. And you know, I kind of have mixed emotions about racing on the road course there. I'm a traditionalist. I say you race on the oval and figure the logistics out. And I hate to talk about a racing package or downforce or drag or spoilers or anything like that, because the fact is I'm not an engineer, not a mechanic. No. So I don't know about those things, but I do know about tradition, and tradition dictates that you race on the oval. And personally, I hope that's what the Cup division continues to do.
Rick Houston from the Scene Vault podcast here on the 3Wide NASCAR podcast. Eddie Greer here on this Wednesday night. Yeah, so hopefully, you know, it was interesting to see the two races with the road course race and then obviously the traditional race for the Cup Series race there. And man, oh man, the Cup race last Sunday took me back to the whole, it had a little bit for me, a throwback to the whole tire debacle a few years back. And then this race reminded me of the whole Casey Kane, the one he pulled out a few couple years ago there. Just a lot of hard hits. And then obviously you think that Denny Hamlin, I'm sitting back on the couch like, okay, Denny Hamlin's going to win this. And all of a sudden, just like that, he hits the wall. And then obviously we know what happens at the end. But man, I mean, what do you think is the deal with with Goodyear in Indianapolis?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily Goodyear in Indianapolis. I believe that it's a combination of Goodyear and the race team setups in Indianapolis. I don't think anybody should ever point the finger solely at Goodyear. because what those teams do with their setups plays a huge role in how the Goodyear tires hold up. So it's actually a combination of what the tire that Indy brought to Indy, the tire that Goodyear brought to Indy, and what the setups that the teams use. So it's not all in Goodyear's lap, and you know, maybe it's not all in the team's lap either, but I believe it's just a combination.
Interesting. Yeah, so speaking of setups, I want to talk about Kyle Busch. Now, a couple weeks ago, Kyle Busch, I mean, it's amazing. So far, he has no stage wins or not even a win yet, and we're basically in the second half of the year. And he talked about, after he got turned by Blaney at Pocono a couple weeks ago, he said that we're missing practice. We're not getting enough practice. Obviously, that was kind of a surprise to me, because obviously you're talking to a two-time champion of the sport and your current defending champion would not say that, but no wins, no stage points yet for the defending champion, and Kyle Busch finished sixth last week. So what do you think is going on with the 18 team? Obviously, they've shown some signs, but they haven't led a lot of laps lately. Or it's been quite a minute since the 18 has led a race.
Well, I think it's proof that Kyle Busch is human. He's not a superhero. He is fallible, obviously, but. I think it's just a lull in what that team is experiencing right now. And to be honest with you, I think the lack of practice is a huge factor for a lot of teams, and maybe that team in particular. Now, I don't have any inside knowledge about Kyle Busch or Joe Gibbs Racing or anything like that. So. Right. You know, anything that I'm saying now is just pure speculation. But Kyle and every driver is going to experience a lull. And for whatever reason, you know, who knows what's going on, you know, behind closed doors with his family or that team or that or anything else. So, listen, Kyle Busch will win again. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. You know, maybe when we do get back to normal, quote unquote, and teams are able to test and to practice the way that they always have, yeah, you'll see Kyle Busch back in victory lane.
Yeah, at some point. We don't know when, but it could be this weekend or it could be down the road somewhere. Now, looking at the overall perspective so far of the season, I want to get your thoughts on the overall season so far that we've seen with the revitalized schedule. We've gotten the word today that we finally got the last leg of the schedule for the Cup Series trucks and the Xfinity Series. So, what are your thoughts so far on the season? I mean, we've seen the midweek races, we've seen doubleheaders. We've kind of seen it all. Mother Nature, as I talked about a few moments ago. What has been the most impressive of the season so far? What are your thoughts?
Well, certainly, we have never, ever seen a season like this throughout NASCAR's entire history. Because the fact is, we haven't experienced anything like a epidemic, pandemic, like we have with COVID-19. So there's always going to be armchair quarterbacks, morning quarterbacks that sit around and tweet, get on social media, and post on Facebook about how NASCAR's stupid, they did the wrong thing. NASCAR was between a rock and a hard place with this deal. And when we started coming back to the track and racing without fans in the stands, I mean, that was the best scenario possible. And so anything that has happened, I think has been the best it could have possibly been. And I do think that they came back to a great racetrack in Darlington, because Darlington, their staff down there is extremely professional. And so it's just been a completely unique season. And, you know, it's one that I hope we don't ever see again, for obvious reasons. NASCAR has done the best they could with what they had. There's no doubt about that in my mind whatsoever.
Man, season's going to be one for the ages. I tell you that. But
yeah.
Obviously, there's two names right now that are neck and neck, and that's Kevin Harvick and Denny Hamlin. Obviously, these guys won Pocono a couple weeks ago, and then these guys, the 4 and 11, battle out again at Indianapolis last week. Now, unfortunately, Denny Hamlin issues, unfortunately, but luckily he came out of there unscathed there. So I feel like the 4 and 11 right now are starting to separate themselves during the summer stretch here, and there's been some names that are coming up here, popping up here, like an Eric Almirola rolling fifth straight top five, Brad Keselowski, and then you have these guys that you talked about the lack of practice earlier, Rick. These smaller teams like Front Row, we see Michael McDowell having some good runs here as of late here, Tyler Reddick. So does the 4 and 11 kind of backing up a little bit, but what does the 4 and 11 remind you of when you go back in history with rivalries like Waltrip, Dale Sr., and those guys?
Well, I think certainly there's a little bit of a rivalry there. I think it's kind of cooled down maybe over the years. I think there was a time when they were all but ready to come to blows as soon as they ran into each other in racetrack. I see those two. I see them maybe being like a Richard Petty and a Bobby Allison. I don't think there was a whole lot of love lost between them two. But I do think that there was a sense of maybe grudging respect. So that's kind of what I see in Kevin and Denny.
And well, definitely a lot of racing left in the regular season, and we'll see what happens here this weekend at Kentucky. Now, with your journalism experience, do you have any a funny story to share about a funny experience at a NASCAR event while trying to get a story ready to go for the paper?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I think back to all of the wars with Randy LaJoy and Buckshot Jones. I had my all time greatest quote after a race from Buckshot. I think he set the record for most cuss words in one quote. That day, I think it was at Nazareth or whatever. But listen, once you think that you have seen it all as a journalist, you've not seen anything yet, because something new and something different is going to happen. And that's one of the things that I love about being involved in NASCAR or being involved in journalism, is the fact that there's always something new and something entertaining and something interesting that's going to pop up. As a matter of fact, I've been walking quite a bit here lately, and I don't know if you're going to ask me about that, but yeah, I've been walking a lot here lately. And this morning, I had been walking. I already had about 3 miles behind me, and I had done some pretty big hills, and so it was a tough walk. It was very hot. It's very humid, and as I'm going up the last hill towards my car, and being, I was very tired. I was worn out. My foot hurt. My back hurt. And I get a call, and all of a sudden I'm in an interview, walking up the road, and so that was kind of a bizarre experience. So I can't imagine what they must have thought of me, you know, huffing and puffing my way up that last hill. So
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I was gonna ask about the walking. I'll get to that in a little bit, kind of switching gears.
Yeah.
So how did your podcast is about to reach 100, or it's already at 100 episodes now? I don't know if you already recorded earlier this week or not, but I'm assuming you did. But okay.
Yeah, it released today. The 100th episode released today.
Nice. So yeah. How did the podcast come about with you and Steve?
Well, to kind of explain where we're coming from, when I was at Scene, I collected a copy of every publication in Scene's history to that point. And after I left Scene, I was able to complete the run all the way through to the last issue. So I actually own a copy of every issue in Scene's history for 32 years. And Eddie, I cannot begin to tell you how fascinating a research tool that is. Just the history and the people, and many of them, we, you know, most people have long since forgotten. But I own a copy of every issue. And Steve and I started talking to American City Business Journal, Scene's parent company, from the very beginning, about how we could go about putting together a complete online archive. And it's just been one stumbling block after another. And we've been working on this for 2.5 years. But we started, Steve and I started talking in January of 2018. Mm-hmm. And as we continued to talk, the idea of a podcast popped up probably about 6 months later. Mm. And so we started doing the podcast, sat down at his house in Charlotte for the first time in, I guess, late June of 2018, recorded the first podcast. And it's just kind of, to be honest with you, it's just kind of snowballed ever since then. And we've been fortunate enough to get some very great. We've been fortunate enough to get some awesome guests, and you know, to have the relationship with many of them that we had. They trusted us and were comfortable with us, and so we've been able to have some pretty doggone good conversations with them.
Rick Houston from the Scene Vault Podcast here on the 3Y NASCAR Podcast with EG3. That's me, Eddie Greer, here chatting with Rick. Man, that's a lot of episodes with a lot of good content there, Rick. What has been your... I listen to the Ricky Craven Part 1 and 2. I listened to Part 2 earlier on Monday morning on my run. So continuing to learn about the sport, not only that, but learning about the individuals that made a big impact on the sport. And through all those episodes, what has been your favorite interview that stood out to you?
It's kind of funny, and I've said this more than once, but probably my most memorable interview has been with by far the least known person that we've interviewed. Bush Series driver by the name of Lyndon Amick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not a lot of people remember him or know who he is. But I knew that he had a great story He actually left NASCAR to join the South Carolina National Guard. And I knew that he had gone to Afghanistan, and I knew that he had seen at least some combat. But I didn't know the extent of you know, how deeply he experienced that. But that was the story that I went to South Carolina to get, was his story of going to Afghanistan. And Eddie, I got to be honest with you, the him remembering being in combat and being in a firefight where the tracers were so thick it looked almost like a canopy overhead as he looked up. That was pretty. I don't even know the best word for it. It was intriguing. Honestly, it was very honest. But then we took a break, and when I came back, he was taking off his jacket. And when we were in the Bush series together in the late 1990s, early 2000s, I always had the impression of Lyndon as being very clean cut, very straight laced. He was a motor racing outreach guy who seemed to have it really together. With his walk with the Lord and everything. Well, when he took his jacket off, his arms were covered in tattoos. I mean, completely covered. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with tattoos. I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I don't care. But I would never have one because I can't stand the needle. But before I could catch myself, I said, "What in the world is with the tattoos?" And he said, "These are my post Jesus tattoos." And without thinking, I said, "No, man, you mean your pre Jesus tattoos? Because you know Christians, they don't do that kind of thing." That might sound judgmental, and again, I don't care. If you have tattoos, whatever, that's your deal. Just as long as you don't make me have one, because I'm a chicken. Well, anyway, he said, "No, these are my post-Jesus tattoos." And Eddie, he proceeded to tell me, start talking about how he had cheated on his wife, and he was a bad person when he was in racing. I mean, he was just went on and on and on. And I looked down, and at my computer, my recorder was still recording, so it was catching everything that he was saying. And I told him, I said, "Hold on a second, let me pause this." And he said, "No, I'll talk about it." And so not only did I get the story of his time in NASCAR, and then his tour of duty in Afghanistan and his experience in combat, I also got the story of his kind of struggle when he came back, and I don't know that I would call it PTSD, but he struggled when he came back, being in civilian life again. But then I also got the story of his relationship with his wife, and how they reconciled through their faith, and he's actually now the associate pastor of their church. And so that conversation, I think, we were more than just another NASCAR podcast at that point. To me, that's my favorite story, personally.
Yeah, yeah. Was that last year? Because I do remember those details and listening to all three. There are three parts of that. Lyndon,
I think with Lyndon's there are just two.
There's two? Okay, I thought it was three. Yeah. So yeah. Listen, you bringing that up, like, I've never heard this guy before. So
yeah. But as far as the other, you know, more well-known people, I mean, the interview with Bill Elliott was really kind of surprising, how much he opened up about being shy and quiet in high school. He talked about the struggles that he faced as a driver before Harry Melling and Coors came along. And he also talked about a a really, really, really bad near miss while he was on a flight on a Georgia Air National Guard F-16. While he was in flight, it was one of these demonstration flights where they were just going to take a celebrity up. But when they were in flight, they actually clipped wings with another plane, and the pilot of the other plane had to eject.
Mm.
And so that was a pretty big story. But you know, we're talking, you know, Ricky Craven. We've ran two parts of that interview, and I spent today, some of today editing the third part. Ricky has just this amazing story to tell. He was an up and coming driver. He just completely obliterated the Busch North ranks and came south, and he finished second in the Busch Series standings a couple of years, and came into Winston Cup with a lot of promise. But then he had that really bad crash in Talladega, and very, very spectacular. I don't even know how many views the crash has on YouTube. It must be some kind of mind-boggling number just because of how spectacular it was. But
yeah.
then he experienced a really bad crash in Texas that left him with a really bad, severe concussion. And that really kind of derailed his career.
Mm.
And he talked about the nightmares that he had after that. And so that was just a fascinating conversation. But the payoff to it is, of course, after all that, he actually came back and he won his first career race at Martinsville in the fall of 2001. And then, of course, that just crazy, crazy finish with Kurt Busch in Darlington in 2003. So, Ricky has been a great interview too. So, and I could sit here and talk for an hour about the great interviews that we've had, the memorable ones that we've had. So, that's been one of the most fun things about doing this podcast.
Scene Vault podcast host Rick Houston here with me on the 3Wide NASCAR podcast, Eddie Greer, aka EG3. Now, about your co-host Steve Wade. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, but was Steve your boss while you were working at Scene Vault? At Scene Vault?
Yes. Steve was the boss. He was always the boss at Scene. And I'm gonna be completely honest with you. Steve, by the time I came along, he was the executive editor at Scene, and then he went up into upper management, and he was doing TV. And it's been kind of neat since we started doing the podcast. I really feel like I've gotten to know Steve far better doing the podcast than I did when we actually worked together in the Busch at Winston Cup Scene, because I was covering the Busch Series and a lot of races. I was going to different racetracks, and Steve was in upper management, and so it wasn't like he was a hardcore, hard-nosed boss who was very hard to get along with. It was just we were on two different tracks. He was doing his thing with the business side in upper management, and I was, you know, just happy to be there covering the Busch Series. So, but doing this podcast, I really do feel like we've gotten to know each other a lot better now. So, and I'm thankful for that. I really am.
that's cool that you guys are getting to know each other a lot more through the podcast you guys are doing, and you guys have done a great job with the podcast. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm learning a little bit more and more about the history of NASCAR through the interviews that you guys are doing. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
yeah, not a problem. I want to talk to you before we get talking about your walking deal, about the Hall of Fame class, the new class that was announced a while back of 2021. Now, obviously, you have you had Dale Jr. on your podcast a while back also, but Mike Stefanik finally gets in, and Red Farmer also gets nominated for the class of 2021, and they're still with the numbers now being shrunk from 5 to 3. It's a little more difficult now. Yeah, almost everybody getting in. Finally, NASCAR decided to cut the number to 3. Now, you still have some of these other guys that got left off still, like Neil Bonnet, Ricky Rudd. If that comes to the top of my head. But what are your thoughts on this class specifically of these three? And then there was another one. I can't even think of the name right now. There's another one that got elected also.
You're talking about Ralph Seagraves, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
The Landmark Award.
Yeah, the Landmark Award, yeah.
As far as the Hall of Fame class, anybody who thinks that any of those guys don't belong in the Hall of Fame, they don't know what you're talking about. and I'm absolutely positively including Dale Jr. in that. For whatever reason, people have this thing where they feel like they have to criticize Dale Jr. And, you know, they have to say or insist or whatever that he didn't have the career that his daddy did. Well, the fact of the matter is, nobody had the career that Dale Sr. did. And to compare Dale Jr. to Dale Sr., I think is unfair, simply because they have the first name. And that's what everybody says is, well, Dale Jr. would have never made it if it wasn't for his last name. Well, listen, Dale Sr. was not easy on Dale Jr. He did not give Dale Jr. The best of everything right off the bat. He was not a silver spoon kid. If Dale Jr.'s last name was Houston or Johnson or Smith and his results were the same, he would still be worthy of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. He won 29 cup races. He won 2 Daytona 500s. He won 2 Busch Series championships. And by any measure, I think that would be worthy of the Hall of Fame, bar none, without a doubt. So, I think it's kind of funny that the people who insist that Dale Jr. doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame also insist that Neil Bonnet and Ricky Rudd and Harry Gant, they insist that they do belong in the Hall of Fame, and Dale Jr. has more wins than any of those guys. Hmm. None of those guys won Daytona 500s. Dale Jr. won 2 of them. Dale Jr. also has 2 Busch Series championships, and that's something that those guys can't say. Now, I say that, and I absolutely, positively, beyond the faintest shadow of a doubt, do believe that Ricky Rudd and Harry Gant and Dale Bonnet, I do believe that they belong in the Hall of Fame, but I just think that Dale Jr. is just measured against an impossible measuring stick. Mm-hmm. And I think that's unfair.
Mm. Yeah, so, yeah, a lot of... there are a lot of opinions about Junior, whether he deserved to be first ballot Hall of Famer or not. So there was a lot of chatter about that one when the news hit, when Dale Jr. got selected to be a part of this class. So yeah, that was, yeah. So I'm gonna leave it right there where it is. So yeah, definitely everyone's trying to compare him to his father, but yeah, Dale Jr. and obviously 15 years straight, I believe, most popular driver award winner. So, and he's still making an impact on the sport today. Big impact.
Oh, absolutely. I very firmly believe that he is still NASCAR's most popular figure. And I don't even know that it's close. You know, you could probably throw Chase Elliott into the conversation. You could probably throw Kyle Busch into the conversation. But I think Kyle Busch and Dell Jr. are in two different camps when it comes to popularity. I think Kyle Busch is popular because of his bad boy image, and I think Dell Jr. is popular just simply because he's a good guy. I mean, you spend any time at all with him, and it's like your long lost friends. I think that Dell Jr. would do anything for anybody if he possibly could.
Yeah, you hit the nail around the head with that one. The Kyle Busch, Dell Jr., two different camps there. Yeah, obviously. So, Jr.'s making an impact there. Kyle Busch also making an impact in a different way. So, all right, Rick. So, finally, now we get to the whole walking deal there. All right, so how, and obviously Marcus Lemonis, who gave away RVs and was a part of the whole bounty thing. So how did your deal with Marcus Lemonis? I know you might have talked a little bit on your podcast, but how did this Lifetime Miles deal go down?
one of the biggest issues that we've had with the whole Scene Vault archive is, in order to put it online, we would have to digitize everything. And the company that I talked to, they're actually an associate sponsor on Bubba Wallace's car, Pioneer Technology Group, and that's what they do, is they digitize old paper products for a lot of different companies. And they actually have an office, or had an office here at one time in the town where I live. And I got to know some of the people and got to talk to them about what I was trying to do. And finally, they gave me a quote. And Eddie, the quote that they gave me was 60 cents a page. And you multiply that times 32 years of newspapers, and you get an idea of just how expensive that it would be. I did a conservative estimate, and you're looking at probably about $75,000 just to scan and digitize all these papers. So obviously that's a number that I can't pay out of my pocket.
Right.
So this entire time, for the 2.5 years that Steve and I have been talking about this, we've kind of wondered and worried about how we will get that done. And we basically came to the conclusion that it was going to take a miracle. And so when the whole COVID-19 scenario hit, everybody was, of course, staying home because of the quarantine. Well, during that time, I was on my phone. I was looking at social media, Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, playing games and all that kind of thing. Well, I noticed that basically about the time that the crisis started, that he started giving away RVs on Twitter. And I'm not talking about once a week or once a month. He was giving away two or three a week, it seemed like.
Man.
And so at one point he tweeted and said, "Here's my personal email address if you have any questions whatsoever about RVs." And so I took that and I ran with it, and I sent an email about what we were trying to do at the Scene Vault, and made the pitch to about digitizing the Scene archive. Never heard back from him. And that was absolutely expected. I didn't ever expect to hear from him, but just because of how many people he has tugging on him for his time. And then I was on the PETM podcast, and while we were doing the show, they were watching the truck race at Charlotte.
Mm.
And Andrew, I think, made the comment that Chase had just won the race, and that meant that he had won the bounty and all that. And I made the comment on the show that $50,000 would have gone a long way in digitizing the scene archive. And they said, well, yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't we just tweet Marcus Lemonis tomorrow? And the next day, Andrew or whoever does their social media account tweeted Marcus Lemonis about the same ball and never heard back from him. So that was, I think that was 1 week. The next week, I was sitting in my car, and it was very hot and it was very humid, and I was going to go do my run, and I just wasn't looking forward to it, and I was procrastinating, and before I got out of the car, I said, well, I'm going to tweet Marcus one last time. And I tweeted him, and I sent it, and I said, basically, I'm trying really hard to get to 5,000 lifetime miles on the app, and I'm right now like 360 some odd miles short. And so for motivation, Marcus Lemonis, why don't you meet me at the 5,000 mile mark with an offer to digitize all these newspapers? And I hit send, and I never thought another thing about it when I got out of my car, because I just didn't think there would be any way that he would ever respond. Well, got back to my car, and he hadn't responded. That afternoon, he hadn't responded. And finally, probably about 9 o'clock that night, he said, tell me more. And the gratifying part for me was not only did I explain what Winston Cup Scene meant, everybody else started tweeting about what Winston Cup Scene meant to them. And actually, Brad Keselowski tweeted and said that, you know, his first win at Talladega didn't seem real until he read it in the next week's Scene. And the next day, probably about 11 o'clock, Marcus Lemonis tweeted back and said, you got a deal. And that was an amazing moment for me, because it was something that we had been working towards for so long, and it had seemed like such an impossibility. But then a couple hours later, Marcus challenged me. He said, get to your 5,000 miles, but do it instead of by the end of the year, do it by the date of the last race of the year, which is November 8th. And so that cut almost two full months off my timeline. And rather than saying, well, that wasn't our agreement, I said, yes, sir. And I started piling on miles. And I'm now actually on pace to get to 5,000 lifetime miles by October 3rd.
Ooh-wee.
So nice. This is a much different thing than anything I've ever trained for. I've done half marathons. I've done 5 and 10Ks on the same day. I've done a sprint triathlon, but when I was doing those, I was doing much longer runs, but I also had 3 or 4 days in between that I could recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this, I'm literally walking 3.5 miles every single day.
Mm.
And with the exception of Sunday, I take Sunday as a rest day. But it's a much different beast, and it's difficult. It's you know, I'm tired. I'm exhausted right now. But the awesome thing about it has been the support of everybody on social media, on Twitter. Kathleen McDonald, KHI fan on Twitter. She yep. sent me a video just completely out of the blue one day late last week or early this week. It was Monday, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
Monday. Yeah. So I think I came across that.
And when I saw it, I'm not ashamed to admit, I just broke down in tears just because of how tired I was, and, you know, discouraged, because it's just hard. But when I saw Kathleen's message, I was like, okay, that's fuel that I need to get tomorrow done. So yeah, that's been the beautiful part of it, is just how much people are encouraging me, and that's yeah. awesome.
Yeah, I've been one of those guys. I've been one of those guys. So yeah, I mean, yeah, Kathleen. I haven't had much interaction. I know we follow each other on Twitter. We haven't had that much interaction. I know we are involved with a fantasy league on a lap track podcast. But yeah, she went through something, a little health scare also a while back also. So
the fact is, she's a cancer survivor, and that's what truly touched me, is if somebody who has experienced that can take the time to encourage me, how can I not keep going out the door every morning at 6:15, 6:30 to go get my miles in. I mean, it would just be ludicrous for me to consider staying in bed or going to my recliner, or, you know, just starting to work on the podcast or whatever I've got going on that day. For her to think so much of what I'm trying to do, to encourage me to actually do what I need to do to get it done, then yeah, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get my miles in if I can possibly help
it. Yeah, if you don't have the motivation and do train for a marathon or to walk, try to get to your goal of lifetime miles, then yeah, that's something's wrong with you there. So
yeah, well, you know, and you know, it's funny. I try very hard not to compare myself to other people. You have told me in some of the exchanges that we've made, you're training to do a full marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this in less than 3 hours.
Yep.
Shut up.
Yeah. I did my first two actually last year. So the time has gone down, and I'm at a point. Well, the second one, my recent one, Rick, was back last August or September, somewhere in there. And I was, the goal there for that race was just get to the finish line. That's all I was trying to do. That's all I was focused on. Just get to a certain mile, and then from there, you're good. Just get to the finish line. And when I looked up, crossing the line, it was 3 hours and 2 minutes. So now, if bearing now, this marathon I'm training for will be in Oklahoma City, the OKC Marathon, which got reshuffled to October 4th, which is in a couple months. Guarding COVID and all this other stuff, but they still plan on, they're making an official announcement in next month. So they've been working with health officials and whatnot very closely and monitoring the situation, but I've been keeping a close tabs on their Facebook page, and they have all this activities going on. So it looks like to me that they could still go through with it, but again, they could change their mind and say,
I don't know if you know Scott Page at Jayski. He oversees the Jayski website, and he's an ultra runner. He's actually starting a race tomorrow morning in which he will do 314 miles in 10 days, literally across the state of Tennessee.
Oh, wait. Hang on. So, all right. So, speaking of that real quick, I've got friends right now that's doing the virtual. So he's actually, is he going to do this like physically?
Yeah, he's there now. And it's been crazy to kind of keep up with what he's doing. But he's actually running it. I think they start tomorrow, and I don't even know the process, but they start in like northwest Tennessee on the Kentucky border, and they're going to run down to the Alabama border more in central Tennessee. So the mileage, I think, from what I understand, is a total of 314 miles. I think they have 10 days to do it. And that is just, I love Scott. That's just crazy.
You thought I was crazy.
That is just insane. So,
oh my goodness.
My 3.5 miles walking every day. I have to do that for me. I can't compare myself to Scott Page. I can't compare myself to Eddie Greer the Third. I just have to be. My competition is one of the best quotes I've ever seen when it comes to running or running or walking or whatever. Is my competition isn't against you,
right?
It isn't against Scott.
Mm-hmm.
My competition is against that voice in the back of my head telling me to quit.
Yeah.
It would be easier to stay at home. So I've tried to hang on to that, although I am the world's worst about comparing myself to somebody who's younger or faster or slimmer or whatever. But that's what I try to do, is just compete against myself.
Yep, that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing is to when you hit a rough patch or hit a wall, that's the mental part. A lot of people overlook that for sure. So
I'm gonna be honest with you, the worst issue for me is not physical. The worst issue for me is mental, because I fool myself into thinking that I'm hurting. My back's been hurting lately, so I think about my back hurting, so it does. So the mental aspect is as bad, if not worse, for me than the physical.
Man. Woo, you're giving a lot of your time here this evening on the 3Y NASCAR podcast, Rick. I'm going to get you out here on this note. So, Kentucky. Next on the list for all three divisions here, starting tomorrow. Now, I was not aware of the Xfinity Series doing a doubleheader with all that's going on. So, apparently, they're doing tomorrow night, I believe, and Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. You got the trucks Friday and, of course, Cup Sunday. Now, focusing on the Cup Series race there, kind of give us your thoughts, what to expect and what do you think is going to happen. I mean, here in the last couple weeks, we talked about it here on the top of the podcast already about Harvick, Hamlin, and those guys going back to a mile and a half racetrack at a track where racing hasn't been the best. And you go back to last year with the current, I don't like talking packages either. I'm not a no expert, but the finish between the Busch brothers, that was something there between Kurt and Kyle, and then Kyle leaving Kurt on his way back home, leaving Kurt there to let him find a ride elsewhere there. So now you got a daytime race there, and just give us your kind of your little preview about what's going to happen. What do you think? What do you think are the keys to having a good race at Kentucky?
It's funny you ask that, because I'm no expert on forecasting a race. I learned a long time ago that as soon as you make a forecast for a race, pretty much you can expect the exact opposite to happen. at least in my case. So, I don't like to make predictions because it makes me look ignorant every time I do. But the thing that I love about racing is that you never ever know what to expect. And you can look at the trends and you can look at who's running well, but on any given day, anybody can win. And so, and I'm not saying that to kind of blow the question off. That's right. Truly what I do love about the sport is the unexpected can always happen. And, you know, and yes, it's a mile and a half track. Yes, the last race or two have not been the most compelling or whatever. But when the money's on the line and the trophy's on the line and the checkered flag's on the line, it's always going to be a dogfight. It's always going to be a dogfight. And, yeah, it may not look like it from the stands. It may not look like it from TV. But, yeah, you can believe that the people in the pits don't think that it's boring because it's not. Those people on pit road, they give everything they have. And, I think it shows. So, as far as who's going to win the races or who's going to run well, the cream of the crop is always going to rise to the top. Who knows what's going to happen in Kentucky, but I'm looking forward to see it.
Yep, and we have four days straight to find out what's going to happen and go down at the Bluegrass State at Kentucky. So we'll have to see what cards unfold in those races beginning tomorrow night. It's going to be interesting for sure. Man, Rick, I have a few more questions, but I'm going to get you out of here on that. Rick, it's been a blast having you on the 3Wide NASCAR podcast with EG3 this evening. And this is going to go out Friday morning. But get some rest, Rick, and we got to do this again sometime down the line somewhere.
Eddie, you name the time. It's fun to talk about racing. And are we still recording? please cut this out. But I'm not an expert in what's going on today. I've not been in the garage and I don't know how long. So I don't know any more than what the average person does on Twitter. My expertise is in the history of the sport. So, I apologize.
You're listening to the 3Wide Podcast with EG3.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Houston from the Theme Vault Podcast. That was amazing right there. And last few weeks here on the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, I have a few minutes on the show here left for you guys, so I'm not going to be on here much longer for this week, but just want to get that in there. But Rick Houston for the Racine Bolt Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. That's all I got to say. Finally to get him on a podcast. What a treat. And wanted to have more questions with him, but wanted to get him on his way. But wow, 100 episodes of the Racine Bolt Podcast. And like you just heard it, folks, it is already out as of today as well. So go check that out throughout this week. And yeah, Kentucky. Back to Kentucky real quick here. Let's just run down the schedule here. Obviously, four races in 4 days beginning with the Shady Rays 200. Going to go down tomorrow night. Recording this on Wednesday. Racing action starts tomorrow night. That is crazy. Man. Shady Rays 200 on PRN. That is going to go down with the Xfinity Series on Thursday. Then on Friday, it's the Buckle. Yeah. Friday or Saturday? Yeah, actually, that's Saturday, actually. So, my bad. So, Saturday, trucks back in action. Last time the trucks were racing, Brandon Jones got the victory there. In that sense, getting it over Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill. Now the series goes to Kentucky. This is Saturday, folks. Saturday afternoon. Buckle up in your truck 225. And then, actually, yeah, it's been switched around. So during that interview, I did not have the schedule up there. So that's kind of my bad. But anyways, the correction there. So the Xfinity Series back to back. Thursday and Friday. Friday night, the Alice Coast 300. So
That's going to be an interesting turnaround for the Xfinity Series racing tomorrow night. And then you got to come back and do it again on Friday. Now, normally, though, the last few years, you had the Truck Series run on Friday night and the Xfinity Series on Saturday. But instead, you got back-to-back for the Xfinity Series, then the Trucks, and obviously the Cup Series, the last... Well, actually, no, it's not for Fox Sports, because FS1 will have the All-Star Race next Wednesday night at Bristol. That is going to be something with fans in the stands. But unfinished business, though, this coming Sunday, Quaker State 400 presented by Walmart. 1:30 Central Time Zone. And that's a 2:30 start at Eastern Time. For the East Coast people out there. So, yep, running on empty here in the 3Wide NASCAR podcast here with EG3. Then talked a little bit about Indianapolis there in an interview there. I just want to say, just run down real quick the top 10 here, real quick for both races here before we go off the air here this week. Harvick, Kenseth, Almirola, Keselowski, and Cole Custer showed up in the top 5. Then in Kyle Busch, as we talked about in the interview with Rick, 6, Michael McDowell, 7, Tyler Reddick, who's been in the news this week for unfortunate circumstances, 8, Bubba Wallace, coming home in the ninth spot. And right up the top 10 was Joey Logano, who sat on the pole with the random draw last week. Now, speaking of that, Kyle Busch will lead the field to green this weekend in the Cup Series race, the Quaker State 400. And the 3-wide move of the weekend, well, there's two of them. Obviously, Kevin Harvick, the backstretch 3-wide on, and I think it was on Austin Dillon, and I know one of those drivers was Denny Hamlin that he put it on. So those guys continue to duke it out each and every week in the Xfinity Series. I mentioned it, folks, at the very beginning of this episode tonight on the 3-Wide NASCAR podcast. Yeah, Chase Briscoe, he put a daring move going in the first turn on Austin Cindric and A.J. Allmendinger. Two guys that are veterans on these road courses. Obviously, Austin Cindric winning two of those last year, gets it done, and Justin Haley come home in the second spot there. And I thought for a moment there, Cindric was going to turn Allmendinger there. Both of those, Allmendinger finished fourth and fifth, respectively. Cindric fifth. Noah Gregson's great season continues for Junior Motorsports. He finished in the third spot. Then you're back into the top 10. Ross Chastain, Justin Allgaier, Alex LeBay coming home in the eighth spot. Michael Annette there coming home in ninth. And how about Preston Pardew? I guess you want to say it right there. Finished 10th in that 36 Chevy there. At one point, I thought Preston got in a little trouble there early in the race there. And that's impressive to come back there and finish in the 10th spot there. Justin Allgaier was in position there, maybe to finish top 5, but he got caught speeding, I believe, or actually either that or I can't remember, was it speeding or equipment off pit road? I believe it was equipment, I think, now that I think about it, but correct me if I'm wrong on Twitter there. So Indianapolis is in the books, and now Kentucky is right there. Right there in the crosshairs, and the Xfinity Series is going to go back to back. Get ready, folks, for a lot of racing this weekend. We'll see what happens there. Chase Briscoe is on a mission. Can he get it going? And will somebody sweep the weekend? Or not the weekend, or the end of the week with these races Thursday and Friday and with the Xfinity Series, the Truck Series racing Saturday afternoon into the night, and the Cup Series racing in the day. Tonight is going to be an interesting race there, and I'm going to be staying on Rick's side on this. We'll see what happens. But yes, obviously we the players are going to be up here. But yep, red hot. Obviously, it's Eric Almirola, Kevin Harvick, SHR having four cars finishing in the top 10. We'll see if they can keep it going obviously, in last year, when Daniel Suarez was on with Stuart Haas Racing, he was battling for the win there until a late mistake cost him an opportunity to win the race. And then I talked about the finish there a little bit there with Rick of last year's race with Kurt Busch, your defending champion right there, getting it over Kyle Busch coming into the race this weekend. So a lot to look forward to this week and weekend with the racing at Kentucky. And it's going to be interesting. And obviously, we will have an episode preview of the All-Star Race coming up next week, actually, at this very time. The All-Star Race, the open, the race, the main event will go down at Bristol with fans in the stands. That is going to be something to see. And finally, making a move. So everybody's talking about on their podcast, you know, the time to try something is now. And the move from Charlotte to Bristol, we'll see how that's going to go. I'm already excited for that. That's going to be, you know it's going to be a lot of being banging. But, ladies and gentlemen, we got unfinished business. Kentucky all week for the rest of the week. Get your popcorn ready. It's going to be something. Big thanks to Rick Houston from the Scene Vault Podcast, host of the Scene Vault Podcast, for hopping on the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast. And he'll be back on the program for sure, because I had a lot more that I wanted to talk to him about. So definitely he's going to be coming back here on his podcast. But folks, we're running out on time here, and time to close things down, as I know I like to say here on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a wrap for another edition of the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3. Big thanks to Big D, the producer of this podcast. Again, we'll get working on this, and this will go out I told Rick Friday morning, but this might go out tomorrow night, between tomorrow night and Friday morning. So definitely it'll be out for you guys to listen to in between races. And so, again, you can follow me at Eddie_EG3 on Twitter. I've gotten a lot of followers as of late, so I appreciate that. Can't name all of you right now. Don't have the time right now, but I appreciate that. At Eddie_EG3 is the Twitter handle, and you can find the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a rating if you wish. 5 stars. That helps to get continuing to spread the word about this show here in Manhattan, Kansas. Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom, and SoundCloud, and a couple more in there as well. Radio.com. We're on there apparently as well. So definitely the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast, definitely getting some love here wherever you get your podcast. But that's a wrap for another edition this week of the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast. I'm Eddie Greer III saying thank you for tuning into this week's 3-Wide Podcast. And we will talk to you next time on the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast. EA Sports.
listening to the Three Wide Podcast with EG3. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your sports podcasts. Spotify, Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and more. We'll talk to you next time, going three wide.